This episode is sponsored by Magnum Tattoo Supplies. Go to magnumtattoosupplies.co.uk and enter the code SLEEVE10 for 10% off your order. 10%!
How much for a sleeve?
Where did you put your finger up?
That was to say, go, go.
Oh, see, I like it when the intros are shit because I feel like we set the bar really low and it can only get better.
Oh.
Welcome to How Much for a Sleeve, a very terrible and excellently executed podcast. This week we have an actual guest with us. It's lovely. Thank you very much. Keith James, a.k.a. James Keith. Hello.
Hello.
Are you well?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Thanks.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how annoying is it that I've already called you Keith James about 35 times since you joined the Zoom call?
On a scale of 1 to what?
10.
10. It's probably like a mid, like a 6, 7.
Oh, okay. I've got room
for improvement. It's happened all my life, to be honest.
Even has it?
When I was a kid at school, you know how in the register it's done by last name?
Yeah,
they go down, and everyone else, they manage to always work out to switch around, and then they get to meet Keith James. All my life. So,
do you know? I think that is something that human brains do, because if I'm driving on a road, and I see no entry, but it's for the people traveling the other way, my brain turns no entry the right way up, and I panic.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So when they see Keith James.
How do you see that sign?
Well, it's written
Are
on
you going the wrong way?
No, it's on the road. You know, when it's like...
I see. I thought you meant like a sign.
No, so for me, it's upside down and the wrong way around. But my brain goes, I'm going to help him. I'm going to sort him out here because he needs to read that. So I'm going to spin it around and I go, oh, fuck! Oh, no, it's fine. It's written the wrong way around.
That's not just
I was thinking if you're seeing...
of you seeing like a no entry or a don't jump off this cliff and you thinking, I'm going to do it.
No, none of that. It's not that deep.
Okay.
I didn't know until really recently what intrusive thoughts were, and I just thought I was
Mate, nuts. Your life is probably sustained by intrusive thoughts, I would have thought, is it not?
The things I think, honestly. Yeah.
Give us an example.
Of an intrusive thought?
Yeah.
Is
it as bad as I could just pour this coffee into my lap and it'd hurt? Or is it like I could run my car into that bus stop and kill 12 people?
Whoa.
The public answer.
Okay.
It's just like, you know, what happens if I knock over this glass of water? It would never, ever be, what if I put my fingers in this person's nose? Right. Or what if I just fully like slapped this person?
Yeah, is that when you're like in the queue at the checkouts and they're fucking about? Is it then where you go like I could just do an old fashioned like wrestling like stomach butt here and send him into the drinks? Is it like that?
My intrusive thoughts range from just like being in the queue for Tesco and opening up a pack of cereal and just throwing it around to driving face first into a lorry. So there's a variety.
That's quite a range.
There is a range.
It is quite a range.
Yeah. It mostly is to do with just how I could upset myself.
How often do you get these? Is it like daily? We're talking?
Daily, yeah. Definitely
multiple
daily.
Times daily.
Half hour, 15 minutely.
Because I think
they're not all that extreme, like driving to a lorry. Some of them are just like, what if I booted the car?
Are you just running on intrusive thoughts and then every so often a normal one comes in? And that's
I
when,
think so.
Oh, here we go.
I think so. I think, you know, like shouting willies at the end of the pod started as an intrusive thought that I acted on.
Yeah.
Now it's a compulsion that you just feel like.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? I think it's probably slightly lazy of me to go from intrusive thoughts to Tourette's, but have you seen that Scottish girl in the driving lesson?
No.
It's amazing. She talks about There's one about doing Lorraine Kelly up the bum, and there's one about Nicola Sturgeon having a big fanny. It's really, really funny. And it reminded me of a program called John's Not Mad, which was in the 80s about a lad who had Tourette's. So John, this bloke off John from John's Not Mad, was an incredibly funny man. So when his tics came out, he said amazingly funny things, some of them obviously horrendous. But this young girl who's having these driving lessons is obviously very funny as well. So when they say things, it's not just fuck and all the time and like that. It's actually like things pop in her head. She goes, right,
yeah,
sorry, Lorraine Kelly's bum's involved now, everyone. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And it's
I think that's quite common. I've seen that with various people's tics, for sure.
There's another thing where there's a man on one of his programs on John's Not Mad. They did a follow up with him as like a 40-year-old, mm-hmm. and he's like got a little focus group of other people in Scotland who have Tourette's. And there's one bloke on there who got Tourette's in his late 30s, and I'm fairly confident from my position of absolutely zero scientific or doctor knowledge that he's taking the piss. He's just got bored and just decided I'm just going to swear a bit.
There's a guy with Tourette's I follow on TikTok.
Convincing, I reckon, to fake it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So he was in there. He was in the room.
Also, not very nice to fake it.
No,
it's pretty tough thing for people to deal with, especially if it comes later on in life, for sure.
And there's a guy that I follow on TikTok who's got Tourette's, and he just does really funny videos, like him baking.
I've seen
that. And he'll tip the bowl on top of his head and stuff like that.
Did you send me the one of him washing his car? And he
yeah.
And it looks so cold. Like I got a headache watching it. And he just turned the hose on himself and he goes, "Fuck, that's cold."
Yeah, and then his wife will come out and just be like,
"Not the perfect temperature."
Fuck, say
absolutely not the perfect temperature. Yeah. Talking of imperfect temperatures as well. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm currently supping a Galeroux, which is Lidl's.
I was going to say, is that Lidl's?
Yeah, it's Lidl's. Lidl's Stella. Yeah, and it's absolutely rank.
I've got an oldie. Oh no, I don't know if it isn't. It's just a budget Corona. Sol
is a Mexican. So I had Sol in Mexico, and I got Hexaco Martin to have a go on it as well.
Is it not budget?
No.
What do we like to call them?
Well, he went to Hexaco because he's got hexagons. But it's the wet is beer, but with some of the components of a Bloody Mary, and so it's got.
Yeah, you've mentioned it.
Yeah, and Martin had it. I made Martin have a drink.
It's a bit like a red eye cocktail.
It's rank. It's got clams in it and all sorts.
Oh,
it's like a red eye is like tomato juice, beer, and an egg.
Oh, mate.
It's in the film Cocktail. Have you seen the film Cocktail?
With Tom Cruise.
With Tom Cruise, yeah.
Yeah, I have. I can't remember the
whilst we're on the subject of beers, you're mentioning what beers you're drinking.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to add a little disclaimer. Because I think it was last episode, we were talking about how a nice time
pints.
We all had catching up at Brighton, you know,
yeah.
Internet friends, meeting each other for the first time, really. Well, I've seen you at previous years,
like a love
story. Hung out properly this time. And you made it sound like I was a complete weapon, just alcoholic, drinking beers the whole weekend. And I just want to add a disclaimer to anyone listening. I wasn't working that weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah,
so
but you were on the beer.
No, I never ever drink beer, ever.
Is that vodka?
No, this is a beer. I am having a beer now. So I did have a couple of beers, but I wasn't working, so I wouldn't be irresponsible like that. Just
beer responsible.
And we only had a couple, but we did have a nice dance. You tried to say you weren't dancing, but you were definitely.
I had a bit of a dance, but I was so drunk that, and everyone in that place, because I was. Everyone looks amazing in Brighton, don't they? Everyone's
it was
got
so good.
Everyone's
it
was got so a flex. Good. Everyone's got a look. It's not
very
there's,
trendy.
Not I mean.
Very cool.
Thought out outfits, and everyone looks nice. And there's just
me and you sat at the.
No, table. You're fine. You're mate. You look lovely. I look like a retired snooker player shuffling his way at the toilets.
There's a comedian, a female comedian I know, and she says that she's got the body of a darts player.
Yeah, very bottom heavy.
Very good. Yeah.
Brighton was lots of lols. So it James, so as is, who we mentioned in the last episode, in case anyone missed that, and he hung out with us at Brighton, and we've been pen friends prior to that. No, we had met in real life at Brighton, yeah. But this time we got to really know your style.
Yeah, and you guys invited me along for a nice meal, which was lovely, where I met a bunch of other nice people that I hadn't met before. Because I feel like I haven't really done a huge amount of socializing within the industry or within, like, you know, tattooists in the UK and in London and stuff, because I haven't been here that long when it hasn't been COVID. So, like, I feel like I haven't really explored that much. So it was really nice to, meet a few more people and actually pick their brain and,
that's nice.
Get those connections.
Here's a question for you. Sorry, Lucy. Is it, because I obviously have no gain from hanging around with tattooists other than having a nice time with them.
And we're awesome. So
yeah, but is there like the intimidation of, even though you know the person's sound, but you know that I know who that is, and I don't want to make an ass of myself, so I'm just going to not. Or do you want to go up and say, "Hi, mate, I love your work," but they might forget who you are, and then you have to reintroduce yourself to them 3 or 4 times, and you just feel like shit.
For me, I don't know about everyone, but for me, it's definitely intimidating. Like, if you know someone's got a huge following or they're, you know, super prolific, well-known and respected, it's definitely like a, you know, meeting your idols kind of thing is a bit daunting, or can be, like the first time I met Lucy, for sure.
I was just going to say, I'm sorry, super nervous. Absolutely interrupt this, but I have written down meeting your idols. Have we burst the bubble? Now that you've met us, you know how they said never meet your heroes.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happened the first year, really, when I saw you. I feel like I was working that year and you just wandered past, and I either recognized your voice from listening to this, or I recognized the cackle, you guys, and I feel like maybe that was an intrusive thought that came for me, and I just blurted out, "Oh, an actual knob and an actual tattoo."
Retro, and you know, that's a retro cut.
Yeah. It probably made our absolute lives when you did that.
Yeah, super nice. And now, I've got to hang out more, so that's great.
Sorry, no, you go. We are interviewing you. You talk.
I mean, I was just
fuck off, man.
It definitely is a bit. like daunting, I'd say, depending on who it is, but also I tend to find that I'm quite enjoy social situations where I'm a little bit out of my comfort zone, like meeting strangers and just sort of, you know, bopping around a place and talking to people, like that comes quite naturally to me, so I find I enjoy that, but then obviously you do meet people and they're just sort of like, "Oh, hi," and then nothing, and you're like, "Ooh, okay." Either I did not come off very well on that first instance, or they just don't want to get to know me at all. So you just roll on.
There were definitely egos to contend with, and egos that directly correlate to Instagram figures and things like that.
Yeah.
But the people,
yeah, can do for sure.
I think it also, like, it's just like how you meet everyone in real life. Sometimes you get on with them and sometimes you don't. But I tend to, like, if I meet people, I know I've met them before and they're like real life actual tattooers, I'll always just say like, "Oh, hi, I'm Lucy," and introduce myself again. And sometimes they're like, "Yeah,
we met."
But I just feel like, why would you remember me?
That's nice. That shows humility. And
I think so too.
And sometimes I'm like, "Don't you know who I am?"
Then you and that's when the intrusive thoughts come in, and you just head up to Tesco's.
Yeah, I throw some cinnamon grahams over them.
"Sorry, I noticed you've got some stars on your back of your neck, and you don't even know who I am." "Hello,
are you one of our 5 listeners?" Actually, but I am. I would say, like, in terms of meeting people at Brighton and stuff, I am quite assertive as well. So I'm. I'm not easily fazed. I am confident, and I'll just easily go up to somebody and just be like, hi, do you want a shot? And so the majority of the time people are lush when you think they're going to be terrifying. There's not many tattooers that we've met, but also I think if they are absolute knobs, then either they're going to have, they're not going to be there, or they're going to be like squirreled away in a corner with headphones on, making it very clear that they don't want to be friends with anyone.
Or even worse, have their own boombox on their desk.
Oh yeah, and then doing out the front.
What do we think about that?
Oh, I hate that.
Music at convention.
Music on your booth that is spilling into everyone else's vibes around
that,
you.
I mean, I think that's the clear definition of like, I like there being a different vibe at everyone's booth, and we've definitely had music playing at the booth before, but just not so loud that people can hear it further than, you know, 10, 15 feet or something like that. But also depends where your booth is. You know, if you're in an area where you kind of got a bit of a zone, then you're not going to be affecting other people. But if, like, your music's playing, then, you know, obviously other people are going to be hearing that. So I'd say judgment call.
There was a lot of trance.
I think that's it. I think it's also if your music is too exotic for mass acceptance, then don't have it blasting out.
Stick to the, you know, classic rock, bad rock, heavy metal. Stick in that lane at a tattoo show and you'll be fine.
The opposite us were playing like a European dance trance, and then there was somebody to the left who was playing Typo Negative, and I thoroughly approved of the Typo Negative because I'd said, like, could that person be any more goth? And then he played Typo Negative. I was like, there it is. So I approved of that, but not of the trance, and that's just my personal preference.
Yeah, I suppose it does come down to personal preference, which is also probably me being a fucking grumpy old knob a little bit. You know, if it's part of the thing, part of what your shop's like, put your shop in there, advertise you, because it's not just about getting tattooed on the day. It's walking around saying, "Oh, I'll take a sticker, not for a pound though." Ooh, don't be like that.
Mm.
But then say, "Oh, I remember them from the shop. I'm gonna go and find their shop later because I liked it, but I didn't get tattooed on the day because whatever reasons." So that is a point that I probably overlooked. I also wanted to say that I think everyone who I've met has in any creative industry, regardless of where they are, what rung of the ladder they're on, everyone who is nice has an element of imposter syndrome that goes with them every time they break through another level. They go, well, I shouldn't be here with this lot, or I shouldn't have this much. I shouldn't be doing this. How have I got here? And the people that go boom and break through the door and go, I'm here, aren't I great, are usually not the people that you really want to have a chat with anyway.
That's it. But don't you find there are some people who pretend to have imposter syndrome? They're like, oh my God, I've got absolute imposter syndrome. I should not be here. Yes, I should. That's me.
What is that? Is that like a... What's the word? There's a word for it. I can't remember. But is it basically like... Oh God, what did you think of that thing I did? Oh my God, it was great. Yes, I know you thought it was great.
Oh my God, did you guys hear that I got a sponsor? Oh, did you? Can't believe it. I'm not good enough for that. Yes, I am. No, I'm not.
Don't you think it's people saying that I...
It's called like a social safety net or something similar to that.
So you're saying X happens, but I don't deserve it. But in your heart, you want everyone to say you do deserve it. So that's why you say it. Yeah, I think normal.
Like, creatives in general, I'd say, are pretty... There's quite a lot of insecurity based from, I think, like self-criticism.
Yeah. That's also one of the reasons why you're good.
Maybe even from like art education as well, like because it's so subjective, the whole thing around it is like critique and people analyzing your work. So I guess maybe it just gets ingrained into us as, being self-critical and being like, I don't know, is this good? I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I think that's definitely normal, isn't it? Just to think that you're shit.
Yeah.
Because when you don't, then you are a dick.
Yes, I think that's the point I was trying to make.
A healthy, salt bay sprinkling of humility that goes a long way.
Remember, it's a podcast, Keith. No one can see you.
Yeah, you can see me there.
Don't
Yeah.
do in your.
Or do, should I not let on that we're able to see each other? Is that supposed to be
No,
seen?
I think this is,
No, I think
I don't think
that's
it's,
normal.
yeah, it's
That's
not
well
that.
known. Okay.
It's not a secret. Yes.
You've said a couple of things. You said you weren't here long for
Oh, I
COVID.
haven't been here long. Yeah.
Yeah, where did you start tattooing? What's your journey into it?
Ooh, bit of a long story, I guess.
Good.
But
I'll lay down.
I went to uni here. Yeah, at least I have a nap. I went to uni here in
Bonus.
Bournemouth.
Art degree.
Yeah, I did a foundation diploma in art and design and then did an illustration degree,
Nice.
which I loved. It was great. Bournemouth, the Arts University Bournemouth, like great uni, great fun, but quite quickly realized that I didn't really want to be an illustrator or the kind of illustrator that was, being taught in the course. So finished my degree, went traveling, went to America and, the Caribbean, did a bunch of stuff like that. Ended up in New Zealand, where I became really good friends with the owner of a tattoo shop there, because he used to come into the bar where I worked. And I'd always been interested in tattoos and started sort of incorporating them in my illustration work, like iconography and all that kind of jazz. But didn't really know what it was about, how I could get into it. Didn't have any tattoos, most importantly.
Is it something that you'd thought about and not gone for, just hadn't entered your box yet?
Hadn't really seemed like a sort of, well, it didn't really seem like an option. But it'd be lots of people in the town knew that I drew and I liked drawings, and they did that. They wanted me to draw designs for
Yeah.
them to take to the tattooist, which is funny because obviously now, as a tattooist, really not a fan of that. Because I didn't know what was good as a tattoo, and as people who don't draw for tattoos do. But yeah, after lots of those went his way, I sort of went to ask him, how do I go about it? How does one, start doing an apprenticeship and stuff like that? And he just said to come in for a chat. And I went in, and he was like, right, take some gloves off, put some gloves on, do this, do that, clean that. And sort of got me to break down his station and then offered me an apprenticeship.
Wow.
So I was
In New
super
Zealand.
in New Zealand, yeah, in Wānaka in the South Island of New Zealand. Holy Skin Tattoo is the name. Alex Stevenson's the guy that hired me. He goes by the Serpent Fire on Instagram. Amazing English tattooist that lives in New Zealand now. Then he later sold the shop to Nathan Dewar, who is a Kiwi tattooist who did his apprenticeship in the UK.
Oh, wow.
So I was super lucky. Like, I absolutely loved my apprenticeship. Yeah, it was awesome. Really good. Working hard.
Oh, sorry.
That's
I
fine.
not. I just interrupt because my brain doesn't tell me that someone else is talking. I just have something happen in my brain and I have to get it out. So
Far
that's
away.
why I'm interrupting you. But out of all of the people that we've had on the podcast, all of the like UK-based tattooers, I think it's only you and one other who've done an international apprenticeship, and that was I think that was Nick Hald, who did an
Yeah,
apprenticeship in the
Denmark. Oh no, it was. You're
Philippines,
right. Yeah, of course it was. Oh,
something
cool.
like that. Yeah.
Nice.
So how long were you doing your apprenticeship for, and like how did it work with your visa and things like that?
Well, it's too late now. Immigration aren't going to catch up with me. But I was
We
on a
can edit this
working
out.
holiday
I'm just
visa.
interested.
I was on a working holiday visa to start with, and then I was working as a bar manager and got a visa for that, and was doing the apprentice on the apprenticeship on the side, and so I had that visa, and then down the line, once I got tattooing, I then applied for a it's a skilled migrant tattooist visa, and I got that, which was cool.
Oh.
But it was super hard, not gonna lie. Like
Was it expensive?
5 days a week at the shop, and then four nights a week at the bar and then an afternoon at the bar for like a year and a half, maybe longer. Yeah, it was super tough, but wouldn't change a single thing at all.
So how long did you then stay in New Zealand before coming home?
Was in New Zealand, ooh, I want to say like 3.5 years.
Okay.
I feel like that sounds right in my head. I think so, yeah. I did 2 years working holiday, then almost a year on the bar visa, and then a year on tattooist visa, roughly. So yeah, around that amount of time. I mean, it's a beautiful place, Wanaka in the South Island. It's just absolutely amazing. The whole country is fantastic. And one of the best things I thought about New Zealand that I didn't really appreciate so much until I came back here was that it's actually such a small industry there because there's n not that many people. And so therefore not that many tattooists, that kind of everyone kind of knows everyone. Like you sort of know almost all of the tattoo shops because you're just aware of everyone working. And then, there's a big convention that happens in New Plymouth every year, and kind of everyone goes, and you just sort of get to see like the whole industry in one place, which is really, really nice. Whereas obviously here it's very, very different to that. There's probably, I don't know, almost the same amount of tattooists in London as there is in the whole of New Zealand, probably.
So when you got an apprenticeship, was there, they obviously knew that you were there on a temporary visa. Was there any conversation about that or expectation from you from like your employer to give you and was and it I mean, like, you don't know me, I mean, because I'm not getting the words out, but did you talk about how long you might stay there or what would happen when your visa expired or anything like that? Because, like, when you, if you consider taking on an apprentice here, it's because you want that long-term relationship and for it to be beneficial both ways. So
I hadn't
it's
really thought about it like that before, but there wasn't really, to my knowledge or to my memory. No, just sort of, hired me. And then when Nathan took over the shop, he was sort of like, Alex has shown me your work. It's good. I want you to stay on, even now I'm taking over the shop. And then, yeah, it was just sort of, we just sort of did it. There wasn't really a conversation like that. And then later on, yeah, there was a, the tattooist work visa I had, that had to be linked to the shop. So they had to, there's a whole bunch of hoops you have to jump through with advertising nationally and, all that kind of stuff. So that we had to go through that. And then there wasn't really a conversation about how long I was going to stay. I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether I would have stayed a little bit longer. It did feel quite early in my career to move shop. Like, I didn't really feel, I guess, that imposter syndrome that you're talking about. Like, I didn't really feel like I was ready to move to another shop. But then I came back here and did a guest spot whilst I was visiting, and then where I work now, Moth and Flame. And then Jason, said, "Hey, when you move back shortly, come and work for us, work with us here." So it all just kind of slotted into place really, really nicely. And luckily, I feel like I've had quite a few lucky, right time, right place situations in my career just sort of fall into place, which has been really nice.
Yeah, and they would have only
That's
fallen into place if you're doing the right stuff at that time. So it's not all luck. You're doing
also
it on you're doing the good stuff though.
maybe a little bit of that, yeah. But
being a nice person that we can actually confirm.
That's one thing I was going to say as well there when you were talking about a bit of imposter syndrome or whatever made you not, because I hear so many stories of people who do their apprenticeship and then they have one minor setback or one altercation with someone in their shop, and then they're like, fuck it, I'm gonna do my own thing. And then they go and own a shop, open up a shop and fuck it up because they don't barely even know how to tattoo, let alone how to run a shop.
They don't even need an altercation. They just do it because they think they're going to earn more money and life's going to be better.
Because they've
They don't
got bare
realize if
Instagram followers, isn't it? It's all about the algorithm.
it's not even that. They just think they're going to get all the money and they resent paying money to the people who actually do all the admin and management
Make
and
sure they
I
don't
mean
die
I,
every day.
for me, like I never really had, obviously there was some tough times and some bits that were really difficult. And one of the most difficult things was not knowing when the end was going to be, or, you know, when I was going to eventually tattoo. That was the sort of trickiest bit, and the long hours and having a night job at the same time. But other than that, I guess maybe because I didn't really have a huge amount of prior knowledge, like most of what I knew about apprenticeships was from like Miami Ink. And so, you know, it was hard work, lots of scrubbing tubes and, you know, working for free, and, you know, doing some drawings and stuff like that. But I definitely learned a lot from everyone, and everyone at the shop put in a lot of effort into teaching me things. But I guess I was like, God, I'm super lucky. I'm not like having to like wash cars or like, you know, take people's dry cleaning and stuff. Like, I had to do like lunch and coffee runs and a lot of like cleaning the shop and scrubbing tubes. But
that's fairly standard, though, isn't it? We've had people on here about to go and like take money to go and pay drug debts and stuff like that, which is like, you know, putting people in proper situations that, you know, you could, what are you here for? Don't know. Do I lie? Do I say enough? What do I do? Who do, you know, I'm here paying his bits off. Oh no, because now they're in trouble. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what it's about.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have any of that.
So did you have like a much of an interest in tattooing before you kind of fell into it, or had you already been tattooed?
No, that's what I was saying. And so, like, I mean, I hope I'm not throwing him under the bus here, but like, I didn't have a tattoo when I started my apprenticeship, and which is crazy because now, not that I feel like I'm anywhere near teaching anyone, but you just wouldn't, if no one had a single tattoo, you just wouldn't even entertain the idea of having them as an apprentice now. So that's what I mean about being super lucky in time and place and stuff like that. But I definitely had an interest mainly in the artwork, like the visual styles, particularly Japanese. I've always been into sort of Oriental Asian artwork from a young age. My dad was born in Hong Kong, and so we've always had sort of like, that's always been in my life. Like, my dad had pictures from when he was younger and, you know, stuff like that at the shop at home. So yeah, always had an interest in that. And then just when I was doing my degree, started looking into, you know, different types of illustration and artwork and all that kind of stuff. And then started including trad eagles and trad tattoo iconography with my illustration work. So I did, but I didn't really know a huge amount, which is why it was sort of a bit just like, whoa, okay. Let me just email my parents in England, tell them I'm not going to come back for several years. It was fine.
Did you get tattooed before you did your first tattoo?
Yes, for sure. I think Alex did my first tattoo maybe like 2 weeks after me starting. It was really soon after me starting. Did a little Ote. He's the Japanese god of happiness and contentment. He's on my... But he's also the patron of bartenders.
Before
I was a tattooist. So I wanted to get like a pencil on the inside of my leg, and he was like, no, you're not gonna get that. You're gonna be a tattooist, you're gonna get a proper tattoo. And I'm very glad he said that to me.
Mentioning Nick Howard again, but his first tattoo, he was similar. So when he first started tattooing, he didn't have any. And the first tattoo he got was a pencil behind his ear.
Oh yes, I think I heard that.
Yeah, and then he went and got a sleeve in like 2 sittings. Only very recently.
Oh my word! I mean, I wasn't going to go behind the ear. That's pretty bold for your first one, for sure. I was going to go inside of the leg because in the summer I wear shorts with socks pulled up, so I wanted it to look like a little pencil was stuck into my short.
I like that. You can get. Have you got it done since?
No.
Have you got any room left? Because you've only got tattoos on your legs. Is that correct?
I do only have tattoos on my legs. Thanks for calling me out on that.
Are you working your way up, or is that what's going on there?
Tattoos.
I just started.
Are you worried it's going to impact your career?
It means I've got to hang out with
tattoos. That'd be funny.
Worried it's going to impact my career, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if anything, it negatively impacts my career by not having bloody loads of tattoos.
You must have to talk about it a lot with
I just
clients.
Started on my... Yeah, they do, especially in the winter. Like, if I'm wearing shorts, it's fine. But in the winter, people ask all the time if I don't have tattoos. Just realised people can't see me again. That's fine.
I haven't even noticed.
Listeners, James just showed us his arms. That's
his arms.
His naked
James,
arms.
Inappropriate. Keep them away. James, put it away. Pull up your trousers.
So
pull
even up. Though you're being an arse, well done for not calling him by the wrong name. So even though you are being
Keith,
an arse, well done.
Put your pants back on.
We're all panted. Fully panted.
Fully panted.
In answering the question, like I haven't been in like a rush to fill up, basically.
Yeah.
Which I think probably comes from my apprenticeship. Like Alex was getting things, Alex, the first guy that owned shop, he was getting things like covered up and lasered off. And he was just like, look, mate, don't rush. Don't just get stuff you know you're going to want. Don't rush into it. And I've just kind of done that since. So I started on my legs and I think I'm going to do like small, medium style legs, up my legs and torso. And then I'll get Japanese full sleeves and then full back. Shoulders, back of the knees. That's the plan at the moment.
How long have you been tattooing?
I did my first one towards the end of 2019.
Oh.
So not very long.
And then we went into lockdown for...
And then we did lockdown for fucking ever.
Yeah.
Were you in New Zealand when... Was there lockdowns there or did you come back?
I got back... Christmas 2020, surprised my parents, and then lockdown was like March 2021.
It's been 4 years.
So no, that means I came home at the end of 2019. So I must have done my first one towards the end of 2018.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm losing track now.
Doesn't matter.
COVID fucks it.
That year out blew everyone's tits clean off, and no one knows what we. No, no. I had someone at work today that it's the dullest conversation that anyone can ever have. But you know when someone goes, "Oh my god, can you believe it's the end of March, 2024?" Like, yes, because that's how time. It's a category of sense. That's how it works. Fuck off. But COVID did knock everyone's thing out of kilter, and I still go like, "Oh, what? When was that?" When was there no fans at the football games? I don't know. 96? No? Oh, fuck. But I don't know. You know, it's awful. But yeah, that's probably why your brain didn't work.
Yeah. So I'm not sure minus COVID years or however long that decade was.
But you came back the Christmas before lockdown.
I got back Christmas. The council took forever to get my license sorted here. But I got my license, had like 2 or 3 weeks of... just starting to get clients in, and then bam, lockdown.
Ignorant question from non-tattooer.
Fire away.
What is involved in the council giving you a license?
Depends on the area, because it's Stowmarket to Ipswich. The guidelines are different.
What do you mean? It's different London... in Stowmarket than it is in Ipswich?
Yeah,
different districts.
Different individuals who work for the Environment and Health.
Yeah, like this is what we were
different
talking
boroughs
about.
Of London. Every single one, you have to do different.
This is what we were talking about when Lal Harder was on. How there's no overarching ombudsman, if that's the right word, who says
tattoo governing body. Yeah,
but there should be something across the country that says, "Here's the basics. This is what everyone has to do." For whatever reason, if you need to have more than that, you have to. Like I imagine in London, there's a different waste collection than there is in Stowmarket.
Private company.
You know what I mean? There's stuff, but there should be something that's a base level for everyone. Because I think we were talking to Danielle Rose the second time she was on, and you were going, some geezer came in and just went, "All right, see ya, bye." And then she had to have forms filled out and like everything ready. And
we all do fill out the forms, but she had to have like 6 months worth of stuff.
That was it. You're right.
Whereas in like Ipswich, for example, I think it's luck of the draw. Like London is a little bit different in that you have to have licenses. Like you have to have, well, Keith can tell us, but
Just it, horrible, isn't she? Just, do you know what I mean? You know, like, I think, like, can I just say something? You're technically, yeah, misnaming him. You're knowingly saying what he's asked you to be. Do you know what I mean? It's bad form in 2024, hon.
James, the New Zealand nonce.
Kiwi nonce, please.
No, you have to edit that all out.
Whoa.
Kiwi nonce. Don't you know
James Keith, bloke, right?
James Keith. You
he fucks them
Martin
fruits, mate. He fucks them fruits, mate. I've seen him. He gets them ones that look like the arse end of a tarantula and he fucking bums them. Loving them, lush, mate.
Thanks, guys. I'm hoping that
we only do that because we're hashtag IRL friends now, so it's fine.
Carry on,
Lucy.
So yeah, it really is.
Do
like...
I even know your second name, Lucy?
Do you?
Is it? I want to say Richardson. Is it Richardson?
Yeah.
You can call him Richard Lucy.
Anyway, right. Sorry. What were you going to say, Richard?
Richard Lucy, sir. Over to you.
Well, actually, back in the day, at one point, my surname was Dixon. So use that as you will.
Bing, bing, bing.
Thing is, it won't even upset me because my surname through school was always Dick. Still is.
Dixon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
I think it's luck of the draw about who you get because in terms of getting registered by the council.
Sorry, another question. Luck of the draw within the same council, who turns up? Or
luck of
the draw
is to who is hired in that council role.
Yeah. Right, see what you mean. So what from one council to the next, it's not different within one jurisdiction.
No, because generally, like, out these parts, there's only one person who's responsible.
Are they 400 years old and, like, have to do beauty salons and ear piercings and all of that as well?
Yeah, do all the same.
Yeah.
How can they...
We get looped in with all of that as well.
How can they possibly know the idiosyncrasies of all of those business...
They don't.
They don't. They can't.
Which is why, as you're saying, I mean, I'm sure there would be a lot of pushback and it would probably be an unpopular opinion amongst many people in the industry. But I feel like it would be so much more streamlined if there was, as you say, some kind of, bit of legislation that says, you know, right, we're actually just going to look after all the tattooists and licensing and XYZ. And
yeah, also how massive
I feel like
it is.
It would legitimize everything a bit more, you know, it would not that, you know, we need legitimizing, but it's just like for it to still be a bit Wild Westy is a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like it's so beyond that now.
It's so much such a massive industry.
Yeah, it's huge. So
the thing I think there really has to be is someone to see the difference between somebody, a beauty therapist who is doing eyebrow tattoos, semi-permanent like lip blush, and artists who are doing tattoos because there are so many more beauty therapists now popping up doing tiny tattoos for like £20 because they've been able to buy a machine, they've been registered by the council to do tattooing because it comes under the same category.
Yeah.
And now
okay.
They're doing Have you not seen all these terrible
isn't it still a different, although it's organized by the same people, it's a different license though, isn't it?
It's like the same where we are.
It's different. It's like a treatment license, but you get listed as a tattooist on the license to do tattoos, but it's the same, like, you get grouped in with hairdressers and beauty therapists and stuff like that, but on your license, and you are allowed to do XYZ treatments and stuff, I think.
Ours is, I am listed as a tattoo artist and piercer with a license to do tattooing and cosmetic tattooing and piercing.
Ooh.
So a beauty therapist who is doing eyebrow tattoos would come under as the same, has a license to do cosmetic tattooing and tattooing.
So with that license, they could, if there was a client tattooer, in inverted commas, relationship, could tattoo a face.
Yeah.
Mental.
Yeah.
Genuinely mad.
Probably hasn't got the right insurance, public liability insurance, because they'd be
right
down as a beauty therapist, cosmetic tattooer. like SPMU, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not, that sounded bad. That's me just not knowing what it's called. But that is the same. So
slight like gray someone... area, sorry to butt in, slight gray area. If they tattooed the word cosmetic tattoo on your head, would that be fine?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get that on the top of my bald head so no one will see it because I wear a cap.
but it's just, this is just the way it's going. So people doing cosmetic tattoos like eyebrows, semi-permanent makeup, like Tanya has said when she came on and was talking about the bullshit machines. Yeah. Are you okay, hon?
Yeah.
Are you containing words?
No. I really, really need a piss.
Hey, this is Bob Tyrell, and you're listening to How Much for a Sleeve?
Yeah, in the episode when we had the amazing Tanya Buxton on, she spoke a lot about how she was trying to do some work and change the industry about buying these fucking bullshit cheap machines that anybody can buy and any beauty therapist uses.
Sorry to butt in again, ignorant non-tattooer thing. What sort of things are we talking about? Are these off Wish? They're like...
Yeah, pretty much.
50 quid.
What Amazon? You know, like Amazon, you can buy a tubby machine anywhere these days.
And does it come in a little box where you get a couple of cartridges, a couple of needles, a machine, two ink caps, away you go.
All sorts, kit,
whatever you want, good to go.
Everything. There is a brand of machines you can buy on Amazon that you can also buy on Barber. So that's really opened up.
I mean, I'm sure most of them are probably pretty good machines.
I can confirm.
I know a bunch of people that use very cheap tattoo machines. And I mean, essentially the technology is still, you know, it's a needle being pushed up and down. I can't imagine it gets too complicated.
That's it.
But yeah, I guess to restrict that is going to stop just people buying them and doing them for fun in their bedroom. But someone that's got a license to be practicing in a studio is going to be able to get whatever they want. Yeah.
A lot of the ones that are used by like the therapists are ones that are marketed towards them and maybe sold on their courses and things. And Tanya said that they are generally much lower quality. Also, they don't maybe have like the right stroke. They're not pushing as hard.
Mm.
And somebody showed me some tattoos from a beauty therapist friend of hers who was advertising these like tiny tattoos for £20. And you just one look and it's so clear that they've had no guidance whatsoever, where you or I might just pull a line. This person has got seven attempts over and over, on the same place. It looks like they've used a grey wash. You know how it's going to heal terribly. And they are not equipped to deal with the backlash that that's going to cause. People are going to come back and say, why does my tattoo look like this? And they're not going to know how to fix it because they haven't known how to do it in the first place. So I feel like this kind of thing is what is going to cause us to end up having a governing body or have some sort of regulation because, well, I would hope, to be fair. But at the same time, I quite like the cowboy life.
I guess there's so many people practicing in the UK that I guess it's not the kind of thing where if you're doing bad tattoos, you sort of don't last very long, if you know what I mean.
The thing is, like working in a street shop in a small town for 10 years, I have learned that people will always be tempted by the cheap option.
That's what I was going to say. There's always someone, my friend can do it cheaper. So then that shit's always going to be around in every.
Yeah. And even if the tattoos are shit, they still go back because they're getting a tattoo.
Yeah. Because they don't.
Yeah.
And also care the thing is with wrong. They don't know because they don't, they don't appreciate it. Still. Yeah. Look at this thing I got.
Yeah, and that's another thing when it comes to registering an artist, it is subjective. So how can one individual who's not a tattooer, has no interest in tattoos, has no knowledge of tattoos or practices or anything, come in and say this shitty tattoo where you can't get a line in is worse than this tattoo that's in a style that maybe they're unfamiliar with? Like somebody would have to come in and say, your tattoos aren't good enough. Like when I got registered, the guy was like, have you got any like drawing? Oh, I think I had a drawing out. And he was like, did you do that? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, it's very nice. And I went, well, here's some practice kit. And he went, oh, look at that. Look at that. But it wasn't compulsory to show him anything like that.
It was definitely different for me, for sure. I had to show like a evidence of my portfolio.
Is this in London or in New Zealand?
Yeah, in London here, in Bromley. I had to get a reference from New Zealand where I did my apprenticeship saying, yes, he did an apprenticeship here.
That's the sort of thing I'm talking about when I say there should be some base level of...
Yeah, but that's something. One locality though, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah. And you go 2 miles, it's a whole other council, so a whole other thing.
But also, like, who's to say you didn't make it up yourself?
Yeah.
And steal someone else's work?
Yeah, yeah. or just say, oh, mate, someone's going to give you a ring from the council. Just say I was here. Yeah, right, mate, nice one.
Yeah, I've done as mixed reference for every job he's got.
When was the last? Name the place that I work for now for a quid.
Poundland.
No, Nonsageddon, so wrong again.
No!
Lucy laughed and threw her head back like a cavalier then and it knocked her phone off.
I went, wee!
I always know I've made Lucy laugh because Lucy's one of those very kind people who has two laughs. They have what I call the laugh of acknowledgement and then the laugh of laughter. And the laugh of acknowledgement is you've said something that you think is funny, so I'm going to go at that, even though I A, didn't get it, or more likely B, wasn't listening. But then when I actually make her laugh, she proper chucks her head back like that Scottish bloke who's carrying a pizza into his house.
That was a full buckaroo stuff.
It was.
So yeah. I wonder everything when Dan Selfmade came to find me and found me on the basis of my laugh, which laugh was it?
Definitely the proper one. The proper one is intense and loud.
I was tattooing someone the other day and I gotta be careful now because more of my customers I find are listening and it scares me. I need to stop talking about work. I tattooed somebody who I found very intense and I had a lot to do. I'd done it myself, I'd drawn too much on there and I was like, shit, I've got a lot to do in a small space of time. And this person was very intent on having a full conversation. And it got to the point where all I was doing, I said, oh, I'm really sorry if I'm not that chatty. I've got loads to do. Really need to get on. And then, all right. And it got to the point where I was going, huh.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? That's great. Or I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah.
Just repeating that over the top.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, really? Oh,
right. You've definitely done that to me. That's fine. That's fine, though, isn't it? We're still
Morag.
We're still mates.
Want to show James Keith Morag?
Yes.
Morag. Oh, I didn't. It's a little break. I put a video on my Instagram earlier. Okay. I might have already shown you. We exchanged some pet pics the other day. That was enjoyable.
That is nice, isn't it?
Did we?
Saw a naughty dog.
Oh no, yes, I did. Good old Trigger. He's a very
nice name.
He's called Trigger, yeah.
Oh, has he got a broom?
Sorry?
Has he got a broom?
A broom?
Trigger's broom.
I fear I haven't watched enough Only Fools and Horses to know. He's my parents' dog. He's technically my parents.
That is also fine because I reckon when one significant, I'm not saying nothing and this is all allegedly, but when one significant person from Only Fools and Horses dies, it won't ever be allowed to be on the television again. Dun, 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 if rumours are to be believed. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, okay. I hope not.
Yeah, but it isn't Trigger. Also, Roger Lloyd Pack is dead and great and definitely great.
Do you know what I love?
And a Spurs fan. Yes.
I've been giving Vicar of Dibley a lot of time recently.
I saw it was an episode where Dawn French was with the tall man and she jumps in the puddle.
Yeah. Iconic. But, right, gone that, down in history. And she said how annoying episode, it was. Because she had, every time anyone saw her, they were like, jump in a puddle, jump in a puddle. And she had to do it on the Graham Norton show and end up like breaking a bathroom or something.
That's me being ignorant to the rest of the Vicar of Dibley.
Oh,
but I saw
wonderful.
That one episode and I was like, that, like, I properly dismissed it for my entire adult life, and it was great. I had a lovely time. Yeah.
I haven't watched too much of the Vicar of Dibley.
Get it watched.
Definitely seen some episodes, but I haven't done like a big, it's sort of, I don't know, from that, like my family, my hero era for me. Yeah. Comedy. Do you remember those?
My yeah. hero. Oh my remember God.
That was epic.
I did it with Gavin and Stacey. Absolutely hated it because I didn't like James Corden.
Okay.
And then watched it back and I was like, do you know what? I know he's playing James Corden in that, but it absolutely works, and I should not be. So there is Morag, the cat there. Oh, nearly.
Nessa as well. Can't remember her name.
That's a thing. I can't remember her name either.
God, that's bad.
But
he's fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Sorry, I was cat chasing.
Nessa, the from
actor that plays Nessa, and wrote it.
She wrote it, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Let me Google it because I'm the producer. You carry on talking.
So I just ran to grab her. Ruth.
I want to say.
While I was chasing Morag jumped on my chair where I'd been sitting, looked at the phone, and then
she did.
It was like teasing the fuck. She's got now.
You are correct. It is Ruth Jones. But you know when something like a phrase from a sitcom gets into society, like, you know, what's occurring? You know, people will say that. What Ruth Jones did that I think only Nessa, and David Brent and Alan Partridge have done is they've got a look. You know, like the David Brent, you know, and Alan Partridge Nessa the like the side eye where people do those and you go you're doing that and then you're not even saying a word, you're just holding your face a certain way. That is
that's a rare thing.
Symbol of brilliance, I think.
Oh, look who's here, she finally came back.
Oh hello, is that Morag?
Yeah,
bad name also, Morag.
Love great that. Isn't it.
Oh, sorry. I just had a thought.
We were talking, or it might even be on another episode. You were talking about a friend of yours or a guy that's on the comedy circuit in Leeds, I think.
Yes.
That does a thing about it was something nonsensical, like an action he did.
It was Harry blowing up a balloon.
That was it, blowing up a balloon.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen? And I've been meaning to ask you, I probably should have just done this off the podcast.
That's fine.
Have you seen Tim Vine do Pen Behind the Ear?
Yes.
Absolute.
Wonderful, isn't it? I will put a link.
You said that, I was like, oh my God, that's his pen behind the ear.
There will be a video of that I will put on the link to this episode. Because that is pure joy, isn't it?
I don't understand how he made that so good, but it's absolutely,
very good.
We've got plenty more comedy stuff we can talk about another time.
Yeah, that's.
I'm a big fan of comedy, especially stand up.
Do you know any comedians?
What are you doing?
I've got a bit of the plant. The plant that's been destroyed by the cats.
That looks like a very dead plant.
It is very dead. The other day. Oh, I think I spoke about this on last week's pod, actually. I can't remember.
We do it all the time. It doesn't matter.
It's true. The cats love a spider plant. They fucking... Burt Reynolds and Morag love to eat the plants. And I went out finally and replaced the spider plants. And they were in the back porch. And I turned my back for a minute, turned around. They're both fucking grazing on it like a cow to a field of grass. And then Morag vomed it all up on my vintage rug. And I got so fucking cross. I was fuming. I literally mopped it up and just walked out of the house and went for like an hour walk across the field.
Went for a run across the field.
Yeah.
There you go. Right.
We've been again, ages now. Is there anything else you want to say?
We have been ages. What I would say is, what's next?
Drawn a lot.
What's next for James Keith?
What's next for me?
Anyone you want to shout at and say thanks, all that noise.
I mean, I'm really enjoying where I am in Bromley with Moth and Flame Tattoo with Jason James and Yaz and Benny. Really love that little family there. So that's where, if you want to come get tattooed, South London, that's where I can do that for you.
I fangirl hard over Jason James. Can you put in a good word?
Gorgeous. I will. Yeah, for sure. I'm also going to be at Big London Convention this year. Unfortunately, didn't get onto any of the other ones that I wanted to. But hey, there's always next year. I would love to do some more guest spots this year, I think. Go do a little, like I was talking about, I haven't really got to travel around and see, you know, go work in lots of different shops and see different parts of the country and see how it's done in lots of different places. So I think, yeah, that's probably what's next for me here. And then I guess just trying to refine what kind of work I want to do, because I still like doing a big mixture of different things. And so I guess, yeah, I might just refine and, you know, see how that goes. See you guys more.
Hey.
And not drink beer.
No, we can drink beer.
Only if I can call you Keith. I just think it's funnier.
You made it.
Okay.
That's totally fine.
Lovely. Splendid.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, giving us your time.
That was loads of fun. And loads of stuff we haven't talked about before, which is what it's all about. You know, doing that stuff is nice.
We did talk about tattooing a bit this episode.
I know, what are we doing wrong?
We haven't even mentioned your new pet, swap up more agony chasing around. Lovely. Thank you so much. Hope to see you in real life, plus tequila at some point.
Thanks for having me. It's been really nice to do this. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
you're
buddy.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good evening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Keith.